Well, my next guest is William Crichton, a songwriter raised on church hymns and Johnny Cash. His latest album, Empire, has been signed for international release, and according to the former Hoodoo Gurus frontman Dave Faulkner, it was one of the very best albums of 2018. William's brought a guitar, and as we'll hear, he's preoccupied with questions of truth, justice, and belonging. William, you're in the middle of a solo tour of the East Coast, and I can't imagine that that affords very much time or space for spiritual reflection, does it?
Oh, well, you know, I think I reflect spiritually every night, you know, when I'm playing the gigs, because it's just, for me, it's a spiritual experience to perform. You know, every night's different, and I sort of let the music take me wherever it's going to take me each night. I don't rehearse too much. I practice a lot, but don't rehearse too much.
Well, music's been bound up with, I guess, the weightier things of life for you for a while now, I suspect. Can you tell me about the songs you sang as a boy, even the ones by your grandfather on his sickbed?
Yeah, well, I learnt to sing, you know, when I was 4 or 5 or whatever. My mother used to sing me folk songs, you know, Where Have All the Flowers Gone, and Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree and all that stuff before I'd go to bed. And my grandmother started to take me to church around that time as well, so I learnt all of the hymns, and we'd used to sit there, my brother and I, and listen to the old organ play, and the lady would play it, and it was so beautiful to hear those tones overtake you. So Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art, all of those hymns, you know, were with me since an early age. And my, like you say, my grandfather was sick, got sick around when I was 6 or 7, and so we'd sing to him. I'd go up when he was lying down, and I'd sing, you know, some hymns. I'd sing some, you know, some John Williamson songs, whatever I was sort of into. And at that point, I realised the real power of music, you know, to bring a bit of light into his world, even in the situation that he was in, you know.
Can you tell me about your childhood more broadly, growing up in the Riverina of New South Wales? Did music have a big part in your home as well?
My dad played a little bit of the piano, but not often. He was always working. My mother loved to sing. She was always singing country music, you know, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, Slim Dusty, all that sort of stuff. Dad would play that in the truck and the tractor when I'd hang out with him. And then at home, Mum would play, you know, Charlie Pride and that as well. And then, you know, Mum also had a soft spot for the Australian rock sort of thing, you know, Cold Chisel and Jimmy Barnes. And so we were pretty much in the Riverina. You grew up on country music and the radio. That's pretty much the extent of it.
Yeah, maybe still true.
Potentially.
You mentioned your grandmother, your Nan. Can mm-hmm. you tell me about her faith and what she was like, I guess, as a Christian?
Well, she was a very devout Seventh-day Adventist. She was a Christian all of her life. She never really drank. I think she told me she had half a beer on her 21st birthday. That was it. She never drank, never smoked. She was crippled up with arthritis, though, from an early age, around 30. But her faith was the one thing that stayed strong in her, undying. Every time I'd go and see her, we'd go up and pray. A lot of prayer. She was always praying and always telling Bible stories. And it gave her an enormous amount of strength in times that were very challenging. I could see that, you know. She grew up on the land out in Australia in the very early days, in the 20s and 30s, when it wasn't easy out there. It's still not easy out there. In a lot of ways it's harder. So that the Bible and Christianity really, really helped her. That message, or the message she saw in it was different a little bit to the church. We'd go to church, the Uniting Church, and it was a different experience to what she would teach at home, but at the same time there were parallels. So she definitely had a big influence on me. One of the things that took me a little astray as a child was she was a little concerned with, you know, the end of the world and the rapture and all that sort of thing. So that was a darkness to the Christian thing that I was growing up in.
And anyone who's heard your latest album might have a question to ask you about that a bit later on. Were there other religious influences or experiences in your childhood beyond your family and the church your Nan took you to that do you think shaped the way you made meaning as a young person?
Definitely those songs in church helped me form a lot of meaning, and I formed beliefs very early on. As far as other influences, it wasn't until my early 20s that I really started to search for other things, or other things presented themselves to me. But they came very naturally, and I always questioned things. like in church, something would be said, and I'd have questions in my mind. You know, a lot of it didn't add up. A lot of it did add up. That message of universal love and caring has always stayed true and has always been a pillar of my belief system. But that's not unique to Christianity. And I think that that's what I learned as I got older, that these things that we're taught within the church that are unique to Christianity, like love and forgiveness, aren't unique to Christianity. They're just parts of Christianity, and they're parts of many other beliefs and ways you can live. And I think that that had an effect on me. That was the big breakthrough. And, you know, and though you might say, well, that's pretty obvious, but to me it wasn't.
Do you consider yourself religious these days?
I don't know. Do I still talk to Jesus? Yeah. Do I think that he exists in the framework that is put up by the establishment of religion? I don't think so. I think it's a personal relationship that you have with that other side to us, you know, the spiritual side to us, the thing that we can't objectify or test. And I think that comes in many forms. Am I religious? No, I don't think so. But I do spend a lot of time thinking about my spiritual side and trying to explore those avenues, you know, and trying to broaden my outlook on the world and my place in it.
I'm really curious about that process of, I guess, reassessing and exploring and reframing that we all go through as we move from childhood into adulthood and kind of experience different things in the world. You spent several years in the US working there as a musician, and I wonder how that patch of your life played into this exploration that you're describing.
It wasn't until I came back from the US that I realised the effect that the US had on me. While I was there, it's a very interesting place to live, you know. It's polarised. On one side, you've got people who are very open-minded, very free-thinking individuals, you know, biased in their own way, of course. And then on the other side, you definitely have fundamental Christianity, and I came across a lot of that in Nashville. That was interesting to be a part of, that's for sure. But I sort of didn't break out of it till I came back home from the US, and I was living at a place called Burrinjuck. And I was up in the bush one day, and everything just made sense to me. It was a very interesting time, you know. It was like I was 25 or 26. I can't remember how old I was, but it's like at that moment everything comes together, and then you're like, well, you know, that what I was believing before isn't necessarily the way forward. It's not going to torture me anymore, because it did torture me a bit, you know, thinking about sin and about am I living the right way, and in whose eyes, and all, just asking yourself those questions as you get older. And then as I started to chip away at those fundamental pillars that I'd built up that sort of held the house of my ideas, I started to realise that there's a bigger picture here. And a lot of those central themes are within it, but that message of love and unity is strong. And yeah, I mean, you know, what really spoke to me was the connectivity between us and the land around us.
I was going to ask you if you think the place, Burrinjuck on the southern slopes of the New South Wales range, is like, was there something about the place that kind of opened you up to that kind of reimagining?
Yeah, just how the ancient nature of it and how it's been there for so long, and it's been a part of the human experience for so long. It's also, you know, before Christianity, before white man came, before all of that, this place was a constant thing. It was forever changing, but it was forever there. And that was a humbling experience, to just be standing there without too many people around, nobody around really, and just sitting and listening quietly and trying to make sense of it. And I think that that definitely inspired my first album, that just working through those thoughts, standing out there in the bush and just looking at the rocks for hours on end and listening to the birds and the trees and the wind. You know, it was a really humbling thing, because we can get caught up in today's society very easily with our phones and with TV, with jobs and with all this stuff, and all of a sudden we're living this prescribed life that we're not really breaking out of, and we're not questioning enough, I don't think. I think, you know, you need to separate yourself from it for a while.
You mentioned, you know, it's the spaciousness of the bush, the moment that you had of reflection. Were there people or particular experiences that also contributed to this shift in your spirituality at this point in your life?
Totally. I think having kids definitely does that. It opens you up and you really experience your own mortality in a way. And that's, in some ways, it's a relief. But that was definitely something that helped me put everything in perspective and realize that those beliefs that I'd held in my mind were exactly that, beliefs. And they were beliefs in a story of a few men that had been put together by process with an agenda to it. It's like a business model. You can see that with the Bible. There's great things in it. There is wonderful messages within it. And you can transcend that business model that is Christianity.
Well, the result was your debut record.
That's right.
Named William Crichton. And especially the track Jesus Blues. Can you tell us what that particular song is about?
Everything we've just been talking about. It's about the allure of eternal life, and it's about the constant struggle that you have trying to walk on this line, this of this self-judgment as well, you know, not only judgment from Jesus or your wife or your husband or whoever you're with, but the way we judge ourselves and the way that we, you know, the way we walk through life with that rather than just accepting us for who we are, you know, rather than buying into the idea of original sin, and which then sets an agenda for you, the way that you live your life, I think, or at least sets the field on which your life plays out. So it was about breaking through that and then, you know, asking for a little back, you know, asking for a little money back.
Down in the darkness, out of a dream, come little princess, you're safe with me. Come, let me love you, be sure you do. Just businessmen on the radio. I want the promise of Neil Young. Come, let me love you, be sure you do. He said, pushed open the door. What would you desire if there was nothing higher, nothing forevermore, nothing forevermore? Out of the darkness, he said, pushed open the door. What would you desire if there was nothing higher, nothing forevermore? Nothing forevermore. I said, I want my money back. I want my money back.
William Crichton with Jesus Blues, played live in the RN Studios. I'm Meredith Lake, and on Soul Search today, I'm talking with William about reassessing his Christian upbringing, learning to belong to the land, and the spiritual quality of playing music.
Jesus got the blues and I'm about to lose. Jesus got the blues and I'm about to lose. Jesus got the blues. I want
William, Jesus Blues was a few years ago now, but there's an almost spiritual quality to your new album, Empire. Or am I hearing things?
No, I think you're right. You know, like you can't escape it. For me, music is a spiritual thing. There's no separating. It's like it's here and it's present. It's physical, but it's spiritual as well. You know, every time I sing, every time I play, or every time I hear singing or hear playing or songs. So for me, when I write music, it's the same. And the people who I write with, you know, my wife Jules, it is a spiritual experience.
On one level, in terms of what the songs are about, it sounds to me like the album considers false gods, the gods of empire, the gods of war.
Hmm.
Where do you see idolatry in our society?
Well, that's a good question. It's something that my grandmother used to talk about a lot as well, you know, even as far as the cross goes. I think a lot of this album came from connection with the land. And I grew up out in the Riverina, and I grew up a little bit, I was a racist in a way that I didn't even know. Like, I'd make jokes and I'd carry on. I didn't understand the depth of connection that exists in this country and that is here in this country and that anybody can tap into if you open yourself up to it. And it wasn't until I started to have those interactions with brothers and uncles and who showed me culture and who introduced me to that side of this land and this country that I began to realise the gods of empire and the gods of war had no place for me in my vision or the way that I look at the world. They exist and they're there, but to me, nothing good comes of it. I think that each and every one of us, especially growing up here, you can't help the sorts of things you think when you're younger. We inherit those things. They surround us. It's about breaking out of them and about searching for something that feels real and that is real and something that you can see and feel that isn't a flag, that isn't a cross, that isn't something that somebody's put together, something somebody's done to try and make you think a certain way. It's completely natural. Go out and stand in the bush or go out and stand on George Street. You can still feel it under you. And I think that that's what this is about for me as well, this journey of understanding that. Because it comes naturally to you once you open yourself up to that. You know what I'm saying?
And disavow the gods of empire and war.
Yeah, get rid of them. Like, just completely take them down and see them for what they are, which is not goodness. It is something else. And I think that once you realise and see and feel the power of the land and the power of the rivers and the water and everything that exists around us and of each other, then the power of those gods of empire and war dissolve.
One of the lyrics on your album is that life as we know it is ending, and thinking about how vexed our relationship as a species is with the land around us in the age of the Anthropocene kind of raises a big question. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense in your songs, or some of them anyway, of kind of impending doom. Are we headed for judgment, or at least to some kind of reckoning?
I think we're headed for a very big look in the mirror. And I think that, you know, either way, life is ending, isn't it? Life is finite. We're ending as much as we're living. We're on the way to that. And that end is a beginning of something else. There's no end. There's no real end. It's just a cycle. And so, is there a pending judgment coming? I think there's something coming, because there's something coming that we're all going to have to stare in the face. And at some point, we're all going to have to reckon with that on our own terms and understand exactly what we've done as a collective. Because as we can see, you know, clean water is getting harder to find. It's the oceans are less and less fish in them. The land is becoming less and less productive. We think technology can save us. Well, can it? It's helped to get us to here. I see our civilization as a teenage kid. We don't really listen to our elders, and we think we know everything. And there's an element of us that is really trying to steer us in the right path as far as using our science to further better ourselves and further, you know, figure out what we're doing here and trying to fix sickness and all that, which is wonderful. But when you fuse a monetary, agenda with that, a capitalist agenda with that, to make money from things, and it poisons itself. And so then we're faced with what we have now, where I do get nervous. What's the lyric to that Leonard Cohen song? I'm here with a woman and child, and the situation makes me kind of nervous. That's how I feel. I'm nervous. I have a wife and I have children, and I'm nervous about the future. You know, I'm hopeful, but very nervous.
I read once that you asked a Wiradjuri friend about an awakening being needed, and him replying, "Those are white fella words. We've been living sustainably for thousands of years." What have you learned from Indigenous Australians, and what's that actually looked like for you over the last few years?
It's transformed the way that I view things. When you realise that there's a culture and people have existed here for hundreds of thousands of years, then you realise there's so much to learn, and we can be so connected to this earth and our landscape. In fact, the landscape wants us to be connected. It's a symbiotic relationship. You know, you read some of the early explorers' journals or any of Bruce Pascoe's books. By the most part, people have been living sustainably with Mother Earth for hundreds of thousands of years. I think the one thing that I've learned, if I were to put it in one overarching thing, is love. You know, that's where love is the central theme of Indigenous culture, from what I can tell. You know, there are five pillars which I learned: humility, patience, respect, trust, and ego. You have to be in control of those five things, is what I've learned.
And you got to let love in.
And let love come first, and let love in, like Archie Roach most famously said.
William, there are tender and even hopeful notes throughout your album too, songs about love and about happiness. Are these things you can have faith in?
Totally. I mean, you know, we've talked a bit about the depressing things or the things that make us worry. No matter what comes to pass, there is still happiness and there is still love. There's this life force that exists that is, that no matter what happens, is there. And I said, in the eyes of my children, that gives me hope. That gives me a lot of faith that we are learning here.
I've been searching, let me tell you, for something real I can hold on to. I found out the truth from an insect, and the meaning to life is happiness. I was down where the Murrumbidgee flows, with my feet in the river, felt the spirit in my toes. Lying on the bank, your rhythm in my chest, and the meaning to life is happiness.
William Crichton with Happiness, from his latest album, Empire. A song about the insights that can arise from paying closer attention to the land and to its creatures. Insights that have reshaped Crichton's own spirituality since he made a home in the bush at Burrinjuck in regional New South Wales.
Now eternal suffering for anyone gone into the crystal ladder structure. Again we are born, we lie down to be eaten before you awake. It's like morning in the desert, like chocolate cake. It's a love without condition, told by an insect, and the meaning to life is happiness.
And if you like the sound of that, William Crichton is making his first headline solo tour right at the moment. We'll put all the details on the Soul Search program page. Our website also has my earlier conversation with Tim Costello and Evert-Jan Awanil from World Vision. And if you missed it, head online or subscribe to the Soul Search podcast.
Oh, I've been searching, let me tell you, for something real I can hold on to. I found out the truth from an insect, and the meaning to life is happiness.